Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go! Listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 202, ladies and gentlemen. We are live in living color, getting funky like a monkey if you will. It is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, as always. I am Chris Featherstone, your host. Follow Crave Wrestling on Facebook at Crave Wrestling. Just search Crave Wrestling. And, of course, go to Twitter at Crave Wrestling. So this is going to be an amazing, amazing show tonight. We are going to have a Daniel Bryan tribute show. And, of course, we have to bring someone who was near and dear to Daniel Bryan on the show tonight, and why not have the man, he calls himself Mr. Ring of Honor, and he is the current Ring of Honor World Television Champion. I'd like to bring to you tonight, Mr. Roderick Strong. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing good, dude. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. I really, really appreciate your availability tonight to talk about yourself and your current whereabouts and doings, and as well as share the career and your experience with Daniel Bryan. I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It's
awesome, awesome.
Obviously.
You said obviously, obviously?
No, I was just waiting. I was waiting for you since you started talking as well. So
no, it's all right. Go right ahead, man. What you got on your mind?
No, I'm just saying that was a very pivotal part of my early career, and it really helped me become the wrestler that I am today. So
yeah,
it had a huge influence on me.
Absolutely. So what made you want to start wrestling?
I've told this story a few times. My dad actually did it, so I was around it as a kid, and it was just something that I loved doing. So I got in the ring, and it just seemed like, you know, so much fun, and it was just something that I really fell in love with. And that's why I wanted to become a professional wrestler.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome, man. So you started doing some independent work. Before you went to Ring of Honor, you did some work for NWA, right?
Yeah, I used to work for IPW Hardcore Wrestling down here in St. Pete, and then NWA Florida, And those were the main two places in Florida I started working when I started doing indies, you know, on a regular basis.
Yeah. What got you your break to ROH?
I actually did some shows with Dan Moff for Jersey All Pro, and he had came down for IPW, and he had just taken a liking to me, and it was, you know, we got along really well, and he said one day, hopefully he could help get me into Ring of Honor, and he was talking with Gabe, and an opportunity opened up, and he stuck his neck out there for me, and the rest is history from there.
Yeah, yeah. Call yourself Mr. ROH, man, because you've been at it. You've been one of the cornerstones of ROH, and you really had an opportunity to hone in your craft at ROH. ROH has given you such an amazing opportunity in the past dozen years. So going into Ring of Honor, and of course, you know, a dozen years ago wasn't as popular as it is now. What were you looking to do? Were you looking to use Ring of Honor as a stepping stone, or was it one of those things that you were thankful for the opportunity, you want to make the best of it? Because at that time, you know, it wasn't as popular per se, but of course you had Joe, you had Punk, you had Low Key, James, you know, James Gibson, and a bunch of you know, legendary figures. How was it wrestling for Ring of Honor at that time?
Well, I mean, I think the time that I came in, they were really starting to pick up momentum. And just for me, it was actually just a goal of mine. That was one of the short-term goals that I had set for myself, was to at least wrestle for Ring of Honor one time. And the year that I wanted to do it by, it happened. So I got very, very lucky. And it was just, you know, the environment there was just full of hungry guys that want to, you know, they want to personally get better, but they want, you know, they have enough pride and enough of an ego to care about the company and want to kind of carry it on their shoulders as well. So it was a very unique locker room.
Yeah, yeah. And was it, what are some memorable matches that you had back in 03, 04 that you can think about?
Just for Ring of Honor? Or in general,
yeah, just for Ring of Honor.
I mean, obviously, my first match with them was special, just because I didn't realize that over 12 years later I'd be sitting here talking about still wrestling for this company. But
yeah,
the first one, the pre-show four-way, which was kind of a do or die, I believe, and then would be the night Generation Next debuted. You know, having the chance to go out there with four of the best guys they have on the roster and putting in as much time as we did was awesome.
Yeah. One of them still an employee active, which is Alex Shelley. So, yeah.
It's
pretty awesome.
And the Briscoes.
Yeah.
Oh, that was Generation Next, yeah. Just a match. It seems like so long ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, a dozen years is it's definitely interesting to talk about, you know, like you said, you know, over a dozen years later, to have this conversation and what you've done for Ring of Honor, and you know the title rings that you've had. I think you've been television champion twice now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the first time you won it as well. So. What was the goal from a backstage point? What was the goal of Roderick Strong? Because I remember you started to, because you had a ROH tag title run not too far after you got there, and you started to have a really good singles run a few years afterwards. Now the first television championship. You won, and let us know a little bit more about that. Like, just the backstage leading up to it, and just how was it for you to win a singles championship?
It was big. it was something that I obviously have wanted to do, because that means a lot when a company does that for you, because that means that they believe you can help be the face or one of the faces of that company, and that's super important.
Yeah.
But just the lead up to it was my chase for some gold. I mean, I had already been the Ring of Honor world champion, so this was a big opportunity for me to become the TV champion.
Yeah. It's part of your whole Mr. ROH thing. You've carried, you're only one of, I think, Eddie Edwards has carried all the championships as well, I think. But
yeah, we're the two.
You are the two. You and Eddie Edwards are the only two that's carried every single championship in ROH. It's pretty impressive, man. So that's really awesome. Let's talk a little bit about Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson. So 2005, you guys had an amazing match. I think it was 2005. I think it was Vendetta, if I'm not mistaken. And the match went almost an hour long. I just watched it recently, actually. Such a phenomenal, phenomenal match. Relive that a little bit and let us know just how you were feeling going into the match and after the match. I'm sure you were pretty drained.
Yeah, I mean, I thought every match, which always, progressively got longer, they got better, but in different ways. And that was one of the best things about working with Brian. He could paint a picture pretty well and know what he's going to paint for the next one before he's even done with the first one. So we kind of had a vision, and it played out the way we wanted it to. And I was just nervous. That's why you do it, though, to get those nerves and to overcome them. So that was the biggest feeling that I had, because I knew I was going for so long, and I knew I was in there with someone so good. I just hope I could keep up.
Yeah. Now, when you two were calling the match, did you call a lot of spots before the match, or was it just kind of, the other option where you just go in and you trust each other enough to, call the spots during the match enough to present an amazing, picture to the fans? How did that go as far as the match calling was concerned?
Me and Brian always wrestled a lot on feel, so that's mostly what we did. I mean, that was why that was such a pinnacle part of my career, is to be in those situations and be led through them to hopefully, one day be able to do the same for somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. So you went to TNA for a little bit. Let us know your experience there, because I remember seeing you in TNA. I think I remember you a little bit in ROH, but I remember you in TNA, and there was some opportunities that they gave you, but it seems like they never really went forward and gave you the push that you deserved from your wrestling ability. Why TNA? Was it a financial increase you wanted to do? Was it an opportunity? Was it exposure? Why TNA? And just let us know just your overall experience there from your point of view.
Well, I could still work for Ring of Honor at the time, so why not TNA with TV exposure? And just being young, and that was why I got into it. I wanted to travel the world. I wanted to wrestle everybody that I possibly could, and this was a way to just get my face on television and get to learn from some of the best.
Yeah. So would you say that it was an overall good experience or not as good as you
expected?
And TNA was?
The great one. Yeah. I enjoyed it very
much. Awesome. Was it as far as your release is concerned, was it just couldn't find anything for you at the time, booking-wise?
Well, they didn't release me. My contract just ran out, and I didn't re-sign. So it was just me not wanting to be there anymore, based on the fact that I thought it was going to stunt my growth as a performer.
Makes sense, yeah. So you went to, you did some PWG action, and then, of course, you went back to to ROH and became.
I never left ROH during that time. I was with them the whole time.
You were with ROH the whole time as far as your TNA run too as well, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So you've been a mainstay the entire time since you ever left since 03.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty incredible, man. That's no wonder why they call you, because I thought that the TNA that you left briefly, but
mm-mm.
Yeah, never left ROH. That's pretty impressive. So what are your goals going forward? You're a TV champ now, and you kind of went to a kind of a change of character. Not too far ago, and you're the TV champ now. And what are your goals?
Well, the goal is to make the television title the number one title in Ring of Honor again, and that's by defending it against as many people as I possibly can, and you know, just officially become the face of Ring of Honor once again. So that's my goal.
Nice. So what do you, as far as Daniel Bryan and Bryan Danielson concerned, how do you feel about his retirement? Do you, you know, I know that he has a family. I don't know if you watched the speech or not, but I know you've had some great matches with Bryan Danielson. How do you feel about that whole thing as far as the concussions are concerned? And he's only 34 right now. And, you know, of course, that was, his career was really cut short because of the concussion. Do you think that, you know, his wrestling ability could have been toned down to extend his career? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things you can't really say, because obviously just doing what we do, it may be something as simple as locking up and bumping heads could give him a concussion. So I think it's good. I mean, financially, you know, the best place he possibly could be, I'm assuming, at this point. So he'll do all right for himself.
Yeah. I think so, too. I think that, you know, you've got agent positions and things like that that the WWE has to offer. So it's not necessarily the end for him. So I agree with you. So what's your greatest memorable moment, your most memorable moment with Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson?
My greatest, there's quite a few. Just at the end of every match that I had in our feud with him, basically, and then beating him for the FIP title down here in Florida was a big accomplishment, because I didn't really think I'd beat him in Ring of Honor. But
that's pretty awesome.
Maybe once. I believe I did once. I don't know. I have to look that up.
Awesome. That's great, man. It's important to talk to people like you who really understand. You know, you feuded with Bryan, so you understand the heart and the passion and the drive that someone like Bryan had, you know, being a small guy, but still, you know, having that heart and that determination, you know, to really exceed. You know, when did you see in Bryan part of his career that you saw personally that he was going to be a star?
I always thought Bryan would be, just based on the fact that I appreciate such a great wrestler, but I don't know, when we were feuding, was when you could see that he was taking everything to the next level. So that's what I would say.
What do you think, why do you think that he got the opportunity over, you know, a bunch of other great ROH stars? What differentiated Bryan from everyone else?
Bryan, he just earned it. Mm. I mean, and with that, it was his time to go do what he needed to do.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome, man. So what's next for Roderick Strong? You said you wanted to make the television championship, the number one championship. What type of dates do we have on ROH? I know we got the 14th anniversary coming up, right?
Yeah, and we have Japan coming up before that. So, yeah, just looking forward to those shows.
Awesome.
I don't have any announced opponents yet, so I'm just waiting to find out.
You're just waiting. Well, you're the champ, man. You're the TV champ, so you got to be ready at any call. So what do you say your best match of last year was, 2015?
Man, I liked them all for different reasons, honestly.
Hmm. So, no, I loved your series with Jay Lethal. I think that was just a classic. And, of course, you beat him for the TV championship. And I think it was Kalamazoo, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That definitely stands out for me, too.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Indeed it was, man. Awesome. Well, Roderick, appreciate your time, man. And like I said, just I appreciate you unveiling yourself and taking a stroll down memory lane with, Brian Danielson with his retirement. Any final words, any closing words about the career of Daniel Bryan?
No, I mean, everyone keeps saying it. You know, he just added so much in different ways, and he really helped, mold, the different style wrestler, and I think everyone thanks him for that. So that's it.
Absolutely. Appreciate your time, Roger.
Yep, thanks, dude. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bring what you got. The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at it.
Four corners, three, on mine. Let's go. The whole squad is making it clear we taking this year. You know who we are, but you don't know why we here. So this is where the big boys play. These big boys play like who defies the living God? Get out the big boys' way. Outsiders with the swoop in. We live as kings. You see in us, but our third man waits in the wings. And when the time is right, we shock him with the proper attack. I go for Dolo, but ain't solo. Cut the promo in black. Hollywood, Hendrix, Frizzle, pinning them to the mat.
And I'm Dash One Nation with the strength of 100 men, with one intent to see the will fulfilled of the one who sent his son to give himself. But you rap about your gas and your rags torture, white coffins when I drop a bomb. My mic's awesome, never lost faith. You in all space, you can all skate, suffer but never crippled. No bin walls in my cross face. From here to Saturday, raving, anticipating. I was frostbit, now I am glacier, mixed with some Vader. Get to hawking with these animals, using God for my defense. In Alabama, we jamming. That's beautiful, Bobby Eaton. Me and Priest, we the dangerous alliance. Nah, the Harlem Heat. Tie the do-rag before we do battle. You're talking sheep. You all what you speak. That's too sweet.
Till the genre is took back, we repping that wolf pack. The foundation's shaking, no mistaking. Yeah, we shook that. Trust in God, we trust. Pushing forward, never look back. Meekness ain't at all weakness. Some people mistook that. Stamping out this crook rap. He turning the power on the razor's edge, leg drop after a power bomb. Tired of the lies, man. We bringing the truth through, diligent and fruitful. The owners in our group too. It's good to be king. Sold out, this war is brutal.
We playing them war games. Our army go move too. You crew, I'm in the Raptors with a bat in my hand and stand to shatter all your plans so they don't matter. In the grand scheme, it's that easy. We tag teaming, Steiner brothers, we love it. Demand the win, establish it. This the clash of the champions.
This is where the big boys play, huh? We ain't here to play.
Ladies and gentlemen, this will be the Daniel Bryan tribute episode, man. Announced his retirement last night on Raw. And so I thank Roderick Strong for availing himself to talk a little bit about his rivalry in ROH. A former Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion, two-time and current ROH TV Champion, Roderick Strong, man, it was great to have him on the show to talk about his feud with Daniel Bryan. This is, just part of the entire episode tonight. We're going to talk about the life and career about Daniel Bryan, and of course, the flavor of the week. We're going to talk about some personal memorable moments between Derek and I that we had as far as watching Daniel Bryan. Moments that really stood out for us. So kudos to Roderick Strong. Appreciate him availing himself to talk about Daniel Bryan tonight, Derek.
Yes, honestly, Roderick Strong, thank you so much for being with us here on Pancakes and Power Slams, episode 202, dedicated to Daniel Bryan, the beautiful Danny B, which would have been a great name for him at some point. But, I mean, it was sad last night, man. It was hard to see that. I mean, Raw did phenomenal jobs paying tribute to him as well, with starting the show with a little collage and ending. I mean, they went over almost a half hour, so... I mean, a lot of people, there's a lot of emotions going on. I didn't see that coming. I don't think anyone did. It was just seemed kind of sudden. It was heard, oh, he'll be back. It's going to be a few more months. And it was just like, you know, enough's enough. This is it. So, I mean, I can't say that I'm the biggest Daniel Bryan fan of all time. But, I mean, the guy's just a phenomenal talent. I've learned to love him. And I think everyone else out in Pancakes and Power Slams land would agree that he's in the top – in the top tier. I don't want to compare him to anybody else, but he has definitely left his mark and a huge dent. And he just seems like he came out of nowhere and just took WWE by storm, which not many people can do.
Yeah, I think what stands out for Daniel Bryan to me is, you know, I wasn't necessarily a Daniel Bryan mark, you know, so to speak, but I respected the heck out of Daniel Bryan's work ethic. I mean, this, you know, he said in the speech, you know, he just came to, because he loved wrestling. And for some odd reason, you know, there was something infectious about Daniel Bryan. And it's just, you know, sometimes things just work. And Daniel Bryan, you know, he came in 2010 and, you know, he was given a baby face. Of course, he got fired, you know, after the whole NXT debut thing. And, you know, I remember him from ROH. So him coming in, you know, he was labeled as a rookie at the time. And I'm like, man, this guy is far from it. You know, he, you know, during the NXT at that time, it was more of a competition than an actual brand. And The Miz was his coach. And I was sitting there like, what is this? You know, Miz has been in the business for 5 years and Daniel Bryan for 10 and over 10 at that time. And so, you know, it was double the wrestling experience that Daniel Bryan had. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, Miz is right in a lot of his promos, especially with AJ Styles. You know, when you can travel the world and do all these things for other promotions, but, you know, when you step foot in the WWE, you kind of hit the reset button. So I did understand it from that sense. But, I mean, he upstaged Miz quickly. Of course he was going to do that. But, you know, when he came in and he left, you might have thought that he was just gone. It was an opportunity for him. But he was just so infectious. And you can tell that he really loved the business, man. You can tell that from every single move he does in the ring, that he is a genuine, truest form professional wrestler. And that's what I respect about Daniel Bryan. That's what I respected about Daniel Bryan. And, of course, 2 years ago, you know, I was one of the biggest Daniel Bryan supporters, and, you know, just because I respect him and what he did. So we'll talk more about Daniel Bryan throughout the show. And then, of course, at the end of the show, Flavor of the Week, we'll talk about the memorable moments of Daniel Bryan. Let's get to Raw. You have Stephanie McMahon in-ring promo interrupted by Dean Ambrose, then Roman Reigns. Stephanie then introduces Brock Lesnar for a contract signing. And, of course, Lesnar attacks Ambrose and Reigns eventually. And then F5s Ambrose and then walks out. Triple H comes out and they have a stare down with Lesnar. So throughout the show, it seems like they're extending the rivalry between Brock Lesnar and Dean Ambrose. Now, I don't understand this too much. I said on the show last week that I actually – even before they really started doing much with it, I kind of like the idea of kind of a more heelish Brock Lesnar, the big giant guy that, you know, can't be defeated, going against Dean Ambrose. Now, again, I've never been the biggest Dean Ambrose guy, but at the same time, him winning the Intercontinental Championship was a really good advantage, a really good opportunity for him to become relevant again, because he was just, you know, so just kind of wallowing in the mid-card. Now, you know, feuding with Brock Lesnar is not necessarily a big thing that they're doing. It doesn't seem like it's going to go too far. But at the same time, you know, it's intriguing. You know, it's, we're having that David versus Goliath kind of showdown. And so in the beginning of Raw, he actually he got up in Lesnar's face. He walked in, you know, he walked over, no fear. He gets F5'd, unfortunately. But at the same time, it caused intrigue. So, you know, this whole Dean Ambrose and Brock Lesnar thing, I'm quickly buying into this. I'm actually intrigued.
Yeah, I'm buying into it. Yeah, you know, like you said, I mean, Ambrose was at a stalemate not too long ago. And the David versus Goliath thing is always a great angle to put at it. And Ambrose is selling it well. I mean, he's standing up to him. He's just voluntarily getting in Lesnar's face and just showing him that, you know, this is who I am. I love that. I don't know if there's enough behind it to make it a WrestleMania match out of it. At this point, Ambrose is still, I mean, he's Intercontinental Champion. I mean, that would be great if he'd come out and, you know, destroy Brock Lesnar, which I doubt would ever happen and this time around. So, I mean, it's kind of like, I'm still, what are they trying to do with this? Yeah, I mean, it's Brock Lesnar. He's got a few opponents that he could face that are a little more built for the role, maybe. Again, nothing against Ambrose. I think he's doing a heck of a job just selling it, making it a match that could potentially, you know, steal the show. Both of them have it in them. So I'm still not totally sold on it as them, you know, rivaling each other as far as like a WrestleMania or anything like that. I mean, but I mean, it proved me wrong, you know. And I'm just saying that, you know, Ambrose is respected, you know, what he's done. But still, I'm not ready for him to be a huge, you know, draw, almost like force feedings like they would have Reigns. However, this is seems to be a little more natural than what they did with Roman Reigns as far as pushing him into the spotlight. But him against Lesnar doesn't really sit a whole lot with me. But again, prove me wrong. I could go either way with it, really, honestly.
I agree with you with the whole prove me wrong thing. What year was Daniel Bryan born? There's your Daniel Bryan trivia for tonight on my access. Daniel Bryan trivia questions. What year was he born? Next, we have Dolph Ziggler and Kevin Owens. Now, here's the thing. There's a positive and a negative about this. The positive is that Ziggler won, so Ziggler winning is helpful. However, I have a really bad issue with this. I'm so tired of seeing the same stuff. 1981 is the correct answer. Great job. I'm having so much problem with seeing the same matches between Ziggler and Owens over and over and over and over again. How do you adequately build either one of them if they keep fighting each other? There's no build. There's no intrigue to bring this to a pay-per-view. None at all. Because we're going to see it either on Raw or SmackDown. It doesn't matter who wins at the pay-per-view. It doesn't matter who wins because they keep trading victories. No one is looking strong in this whole feud. And whoever wins, if they have a match at Fastlane, it'll probably be good. But whoever wins, it doesn't matter. It's not going to help either one of them. If Kevin Owens beats Dolph Ziggler, he already lost to him a couple times before the pay-per-view. So it's not going to build Kevin Owens or make him look stronger. He's just going to beat the same person who he lost to a couple times. I have a really big issue with that, with properly building stars in the WWE. Kevin Owens is one of the best heels on the entire roster, and you're making him look like a second-rate wrestler. Horrible, horrible booking, horrible, horrible way to build a very strong heel. This match was good, yes, but at the same time, who really cares about it in the long run?
You speak for everybody. I don't care about it. We've seen it a million times. I mean, they both put on a great show. They can sell a match and make it awesome. However, you see it so many times that both have wins and losses in the feud. I mean, Owens was on a hot streak not too long ago, and now he's starting to look like a defeated pup. I mean, the same thing with Ziggler. I mean, it's like Ziggler's almost like a they never know what to do with this guy. So they just keep putting him in these matches. Now, yeah, he can put on a great show, but again, it's not going to sell a pay-per-view. I don't care to see this on a pay-per-view. I've seen it enough times on Raw, SmackDown, Sunday Night Heat, whatever show they have, that's going to be, granted, Ziggler versus Owens. So we've seen it, we've seen it, we've seen it. I don't care anymore. You don't care. I don't think Pancakes and Power Slams fan base cares. We're all in this together. Ladies and gentlemen, if there's one person out there that says this is going to be a highlight of Fastlane or any future matches they have, then stop listening, because you can't convince us otherwise. There's no way.
Exactly. So totally agree with that. There's nothing – this isn't even going to – it's going to get to the point where this isn't even a highlight of main event. I mean – We're probably going to see, you know, this match carry over on Superstars or something crazy like that. It's just one of those things. You know, you had Savage and, like, for instance, you had Savage and Roberts. And, you know, their feud ended up having them, you know, they were feuding. They had a match at Saturday Night's Main Event. You know, he got DDT'd on the concrete. He had a concussion. He went out. He came back, you know, with some time. You know, people were behind the feud because Jake Roberts was a heel. I just watched a documentary recently within the past few days, and Jake Roberts was a part of the documentary. He said something just, you know, Jake Roberts, you know, it's one of those things that, as a psychologist, as a soon-to-be doctor who is a psychologist, it's just really interesting to look into and just really delve into the mind of Jake Roberts. This guy is just – he's just endowed with knowledge of wrestling. He's intelligent. He's so knowledgeable. His psychology, his ring psychology, his psychology of the business is really second to none. He says something so profound that I'll just, again, you know, so many times when Jake Roberts talks, you just have to take a deep breath because you're so enamored with what he says. But he said something like, you know, don't change your character, face or heel. And this is my Jake Roberts impersonation. Don't change your character, face or heel. Because what happens is when you're the same character, face or heel, they're going to buy into it no matter what. And when you're a heel, what you do is you make the opponent look larger than life. Because what happens is when the opponent beats you, you say, I just lost to somebody who's larger than life. But when I beat him, I say, you know what? I just beat someone who's larger than life. I mean, like, that was Roberts. I'm sitting here at the gym listening to that. I'm like, man, preach. You know, he's such an amazing psychologist. And it makes perfect sense. I mean, why can't the bookers listen to Jake Roberts and look at tapes and look at documentaries and listen to stuff like that? Because that's how you build stars. You make them look larger than life. You make the baby face look larger than life. That's what you did back in the 80s. That's the reason why Hulk Hogan was so over. And you had people who couldn't wrestle a lick who was just big. If you had a big person, Hulk Hogan as much, you know, as backstage we can talk about him, as much as I don't agree with a lot of things that he said, that he said and done, you know, backstage throughout the years, Hulk Hogan's the man, you know, as far as wrestling is concerned, he always will be. Hulk Hogan made someone like Zeus look like $1 million. And Zeus, the only thing that Zeus had to do was come out to the ring and beat his own chest up. That's the only thing that Zeus had to do was beat his own chest up, and it made him look like $1 million. That's how you build a heel. You don't just have them lose match after match after match after match and go against the same person over and over and over and over again. It does not make any sense. As Jake Roberts would say, you got to make a bit larger than life. You know, that's what you do. You make them larger than life. The baby face is larger than life. If he's built, it's larger than life. If the heel beats the baby face before the big culmination of the baby face winning, because the baby face will always win, the heel, during the feud, either wipes out the babyface, takes him out, brutally attacks him, gets the wrestlers behind the babyface, and then the heel looks stronger because the heel just took out the larger-than-life babyface. Simple booking. But nowadays, you got to just keep on booking match after match after match with the same person, and it doesn't build any one of them. Jake Roberts, Derek, how about that?
Jake Roberts is, there's nothing I can add to what you just said. I mean, the master psychologist of all time. He could make anybody look fantastic. And, I mean, it's like really going, when I watched him back in the day, it's not like you almost realize that until afterwards. You look back and you're like, wow, there's nothing. I mean, he's, nobody has matched what he's done as far as making the heel, and just cutting the promos. I mean, forget about it. You can't – he's not duplicatable. Is that a word? You can't make another Jake Snake Roberts, and he's always just one of those – I mean, just a voice alone. I mean, I don't know if it's all the cigarettes and whiskeys down in his life, but, I mean, the dude, just to listen to him talk. Like you said, I have the DVD. I've seen it a few times. Not lately, but I want to hear Jake Roberts recite The Wizard of Oz, and he would make it sound, you know, like the best thing in the world.
We're off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz. Because.
So, I mean, you know where I'm coming from. I mean, again, and it's just feuds with everybody. Even he said with the Ultimate Warrior, he's just, you know, that he made even the Warrior look good. So
yeah, sure did.
So, hats off to Jake, man. I mean, he's one in a million.
Yeah, he sure is, man. I totally agree with that. Next question for Daniel Bryan. What year did Daniel Bryan debut? Next, we saw Charlotte and Alicia Fox. And, okay, here we go. Here's another gripe that I have. Again, you have to distinguish your faces and your heels. If you want to have, you know, not necessarily a good guy or a bad guy, go watch MMA. This is professional wrestling. You have to build your characters. You have to make someone buy in to the fact that I can't stand this person or I really like this person. That is wrestling 101. Period. If I'm watching a match between Charlotte and Alicia Fox, who am I going to cheer for? Charlotte's a heel. She does heelish things. Alicia, don't know what the heck she is, but she does heelish things. So who am I cheering for in this match? Why are you just booking matches on Raw? I mean, Charlotte won, so of course that's I guess, making her better. It's building her better, but at the same time, you know, I guess they booked Alicia Fox because Alicia Fox is with Team Bella with Brie, but Brie has been a heel, but Daniel retired, so she's a face again. and she's going against Charlotte, but they really didn't build her up to be a face. She really didn't make a turn. She's just kind of a face by default. So by default, Alicia, who hangs out with Brie, goes against Charlotte. I'm already confused about who to even pay attention to. This isn't helping Charlotte because Charlotte's a heel, so she needs to beat a babyface to make herself as a heel look better, to build her character. She's not building her character by beating Alicia Fox. There's nothing about Alicia Fox that helps Charlotte as a heel. If she was a babyface, if they built Alicia up strong enough to be a babyface, and if she beat her, yes, that would help Charlotte's character. However, it doesn't, because Alicia's a tweener, I guess. Heelish, face by default tweener. So there's nothing that Alicia Fox can do that helped Charlotte's character. That's the reason why this match was just a total throwaway for me.
The match was disgusting. The thing is, it's almost like they play pin the tail on the diva in the back. They just blindfold themselves, and whoever they end up sticking the whatever to, it's, okay, Alicia Fox, put her out against Charlotte. And, I mean, Charlotte's got a lot to offer. And, again, it's not helping her character one lousy bit, putting her against Alicia Fox, who, again, nobody knows from 1 week. She's going to be heel. She's going to be face. I mean, it's just such a total whirlwind of absolutely nothing. That's the Divas division. I mean, we can go back and forth each week. This was a good night. Well, last week was a horrible night. Last night was absolutely a disgrace. And it does nothing for either side. Even Ric Flair looks embarrassed on the side. And, I mean, he's there with his woos and his chants and whatever. But, again, it does nothing for Charlotte because she's got nothing to prove against Alicia Fox. Because Alicia's might as well be like a Gilbert or something. There's nothing important or exciting about the Divas division because they choose to make it that way, it seems like. I mean, you've got the talent there for some of them, and especially someone with Charlotte. I mean, she kind of stands out because she's tall, she's got the name, and she's got the ability, but it's you got to put her up against someone that can help her out because she can't do a match by herself.
She can't, and it really doesn't matter who it is. I mean, if you're going against someone who isn't strong enough to make you look better, it's just a waste of time. I mean, it really doesn't matter who it is. I mean, you know, unless you're that rare exception, you know, with someone like The Rock is going against Hurricane, you know, the Hurricane, and when Hurricane beat The Rock, you know, that made him look like a star. You know, because you have that rare exception of The Rock being just really immortal in a sense. You know, he's one of the few people who has that really immortal status when it comes to pro wrestling. But, you know, for the typical build, for the typical, you know, desire to build any talent in the WWE, you can't do it, man. You can't just have these random matches, you know, for the sake of it. First of all, it's 3 hours, so I'm already getting antsy after hour one. So you have to keep me. You have to keep me. And I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. And, you know, I've been watching wrestling my entire life. This is the 202nd episode of the Pancakes of Power Slam show. We have been doing this show for 202 consecutive weeks. We have not taken a single week off. That shows you the dedication that we have to do this show and the dedication that we have of watching professional wrestling. We do this for a living now. We are podcasters. We host a radio show. We do this for a living. So here's the thing. We watch wrestling because we do it. It's a part of our job now. But here's the thing. Derek has even said this before, and I agree. There would be times that I would have a very strong inkling to miss wrestling or not watch it on Monday. I would DVR it. You know, if I didn't have the show on Tuesday, I would be tempted to DVR and watch it, you know, some other day, because I'm not as interested in the product to make me watch it live for 3 hours straight after, you know, having a long day, you know, and it's just not like that anymore. And it's really unfortunate. You know, the hook yesterday was, and I think and waiting to the very end for the Daniel Bryan speech was very good from a business standpoint. Yes, it was, because that was the hook. That was the hook to have us endure Raw to watch the end, and it was definitely worth it because the speech was absolutely phenomenal. But at the same time, here's your opportunity. You're having people who's going to stick to the product for 3 hours this week. If you don't, you know, you see the numbers, you see the quarterly numbers, they dip, they go up a little bit, they dip, but they keep dipping. You have the opportunity of people that you know is going to be hooked to the TV for 3 hours. And you know this because you're setting up Daniel Bryan to become the person. The speech is going to be the moment. So do things that are a little bit more leading and a little bit more exciting to carry over to the next week's Raw. At least, you know, at least the next week's Raw. Preferably SmackDown, but they don't really do that much. At least carry to the next week's Raw. That's how you have to book it, man. It's real simple. We do not have the correct answer yet. The question on board is, what year did Daniel Bryan debut in professional wrestling? What was his first year in professional wrestling? Next, we have 1999. That is the correct answer. Great job. Miz TV with Chris Jericho. I wrote this, you know, I wrote an article on WAWNation.com. Chris Jericho's, he's not the guy for AJ Styles. And, you know, I'll probably go further into this maybe. But, you know, there's some spoilers going out for SmackDown. I'm not going to spoil it for you. But, you know, win or lose, Chris Jericho is just not the guy for AJ Styles, because you come right off the bat, even if they do a series, AJ won the first match, you know, and even if Jericho wins on SmackDown, AJ is going to win the feud. The whole point of doing this is to make AJ look good. And Chris Jericho is notorious for making other people look good without having a real payoff at the end. That's the reason why his character has been weakened for so long in his, you know, 17 years, you know, 16 and a half years in the WWE. His character has gotten weakened so much because even as a face or a heel, I can't think of one feud that he's actually won in the long run. I think, if I can think of possibly one, I know that he feuded against Dolph Ziggler a few years ago when Ziggler was a heel. And before he left, I think it was like a Raw that he beat Ziggler or something like that. But, I mean, that really didn't do much because Ziggler, of course, Ziggler won still. But it's, oh no, you know what? I think it was he won at SummerSlam because, well, he didn't even win that feud because if my memory serves me correctly, I think it was something like he won at SummerSlam, I think it was, and then he lost the Raw. He lost that Raw against like Loser Leaves or something like that. So he didn't even win that feud. I can't even think of a feud that he won that that built Jericho as a person. I mean, he's known. He's one of my top five, but at the same time, his character has been mired for so long that he really does not put people over. I mean, you know, Randy Orton puts people over because he didn't lose much. Sheamus puts people over because he didn't lose much. Of course, John Cena goes without saying. He puts people over because he didn't lose much. You're putting people, of course, Brock Lesnar. If anybody beats Brock Lesnar, they're over, period. It doesn't matter who you are. If Heath Slater beats Brock Lesnar, Heath Slater is an automatic upper mid-card wrestler because that's how strong Brock Lesnar is as a character. He's been built that way. Undertaker as well. So with Jericho, not so much. Not even at all, really. Because his character has been built for so long to be the guy who makes other people look good. So that wears off, face or heel, and now he's doing the same old song and dance to make AJ Styles look better. I'm not a fan of it. And I even said this, you know, in my article. I think The Miz would have been a better option to go against and feud with AJ Styles, because even with The Miz, you know, he's not the best person as far as win-loss record is concerned. But even with The Miz, he's a strong heel. He can elicit heel reactions. We saw it on Raw. He's a very strong heel, even as a mid-carder. A really good mid-card heel that elicits reaction enough, and he's a heat magnet. So he has enough heat himself. He garners enough heat to make AJ Styles look strong, because he has all this heat. AJ Styles beats him. That means AJ Styles looks strong because The Miz is garnering all of his heat. Jericho's not, I mean, he gets pops, but people are just kind of giving him sympathy. And here's the thing. I'm a Jericho mark. Derek knows, everybody knows who listens to this show. People know how much of a Chris Jericho fan I am. But I have to tell the truth. I have to just be honest here. Jericho is not the guy. He doesn't put people over. He just loses to people. And that's really basically what it is. And it's unfortunate, but at the same time, you know, I'll get some good matches out of it. But it really doesn't, in the long run, it really doesn't build the other person.
Yeah, it doesn't build the other person. I could almost see, like, maybe Owens. I mean, forget about his feud with Ziggler. Put him in there with AJ Styles. There's a couple of these. Someone from the Wyatt family. I mean, Chris Jericho, again, he's just he's in, he's out. He's in, he's out. So, I mean, he doesn't really make any feud that he's incredible anymore. And for the fact that he loses all the time. So it does nothing for AJ Styles. The Miz, you just mentioned, that would have been perfect. Even though The Miz seems to be slipping a lot as far as, you know, his popularity and notoriety. I'd love to see Kevin Owens get in there with AJ on the WWE. I'd love to see, not Bray, of course, but Rowan or Harper. I mean, they could give out a good match to him. I mean, they're big guys and they're mid-card. Let him, or even let AJ start out small, go up against Neville. You imagine the match that they could put on.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. I mean, they could have done a lot. Bring him in, again, against someone like Neville, even though Neville, I mean, who you want to cheer for. But, I mean, just the match itself would be phenomenal to the point where next you could have Owens come out. And, you know, I don't know if they're just trying to bury AJ, like destroy him like they did Sting, you know, God forbid, or, you know, what's going on. But so far, I mean, his run has been blah, and it's been forgettable. And Chris Jericho can't do anything to help that.
Yeah, I mean, they really, I mean, Miz has helped it with the whole Miz TV thing and being kind of inserted in the feud. I think that's helped it, but they haven't built AJ strong enough against someone to kind of have him cross that threshold. Owens eliminating him was a really, really good start that they could have done, but they did the Jericho route. Not a big fan of that. I mean, you know, Jericho and AJ could have done house shows to kind of get AJ acclimated to the styles, but just from a road to WrestleMania standpoint, it doesn't make much sense to have AJ and Jericho, even if Jericho turns heel. It doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, AJ Styles is going to beat heel Jericho. So it doesn't do much for AJ, whether Jericho's a face or a heel. I mean, we can enjoy it more when Jericho's a face because they both get really strong reactions. But at the same time, like I said, at the end of the day, the payoff is not much for AJ Styles. I was talking to a great friend of mine. He asked me what matches would I have liked to see with AJ other than Jericho at the current time. You know, I mentioned Miz, but you mentioned the Wyatt family, I did too. This was a few days ago. I even said Harper. I think Luke Harper is one of the most underrated wrestlers in any promotion. I think he's an amazing hand, and you know, he is, for his size, he's so agile. He can do a lot of things that luchadors can do. And he is a really, really solid talent, really good heel, great character, very good charisma. And if, you know, if they're building the whole Wyatt family to be somebody and they're having these attacks on different people like Big Show and Ryback, you know, attack AJ and have someone like Luke Harper be that guy who kind of fronts the attack on AJ, kind of like when Bray fronts the attack on Brock Lesnar. Have Luke Harper kind of come out on his own, still be in the Wyatt family, because Luke Harper by himself was not a very good idea, but still be a part of the Wyatt family, be the strong second leader, and attack AJ Styles out of nowhere. See, the thing is with the Wyatt family, you don't have to really build them much. It's just a matter of the lights go off. It doesn't matter who's in the ring. They can stay. The Wyatt family has the opportunity and has the ability to start a feud with anyone at any given time, because Bray has the mic work to come up with some type of weird reason of why said person was attacked. Same thing with AJ. You know, Bray can be the spokesperson for Luke Harper. Eventually Luke can say, you know, you come in here, you want to make an impact. Will you make an impact with the Wyatt family? There you go. Luke Harper versus AJ Styles at WrestleMania. That would tear the house down.
It would. But we don't really see that coming anytime soon. I don't know, whenever Jericho decides to go back out on tour with Fozzy or whatever they're waiting on, or why he's even still around. But, I mean, yeah. I mean, the Wyatt family, I mean, they do what they do. They're good. And they, you know, Harper would really, I mean, him and AJ Styles, again, would typically just tear the place down, tear it apart. It would be absolutely awesome. And, I mean, even I was thinking AJ Styles and Sheamus wouldn't be too bad.
Not too bad.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's
Del
a lot
Rio
of options.
Would be good, too.
Del Rio.
Him and Del Rio would be good.
Any of those guys. Even Barrett would be a good option for AJ Styles.
Yeah, he's injured,
I mean,
but he's injured, well, but I think that would be a good match if he wasn't
his
injured.
His character,
yeah,
and his performance ability. So, I mean, there's a lot of options there. Why they chose Jericho, I don't know if this is Jericho's way of kind of exiting the building or what they're – I don't know. I don't want to talk about that because that's just, you know, my opinion. But anyway, so, yeah, there's a lot of opportunity there for Styles. Is the WWE going to wake up and realize that, you know, this is somebody they really need to harness and take care of? Make him,
yeah,
their boy. I mean, just do it.
I mean, listen, I – as a journalist and writing for, you know, some very reputable companies, I get some information from people. And – yeah, I talk to agents and I talk to people backstage and I talk to, you know, some insiders. And yeah, I have a very strong indication of how much AJ Styles makes. And it's a pretty penny. And it's one of those things that what he gets gives the WWE no other choice but to make him a star. And that's just good negotiation. That's what it really what it boils down to. And real quick, let me do this. A couple weeks ago, we had the 200th episode. So I wanted to make sure that I give some love to some other people who has websites and podcasts that gave me some love and some awesome encouragement during that 200 episode. We have Bill Behrens. Let's start with Bill Behrens. Bill Behrens is AJ Styles' agent. Shout out to Bill Behrens. He says, Bill Behrens, he sent to me.
Bill Brasky.
he said, Bill Brasky. Yeah, congratulations on 200th episode. Yeah, so he was a very, very awesome, very, very awesome encouragement there from Bill Barron's AJ Styles' agent. My boy Evan Prout from Under the Mat Radio, he also had some awesome words to say. He says, to my brother, the personal realm and his business, very proud of your success and hard drive day by day. You and I have the same vision and work very hard at what we do. Your show is well done and very informative. Keep climbing the mountain of this world of radio podcast. Good work, brother. Very, very encouragement stuff there. We had Julia Romano from Bleacher Report, my old Bleacher Report colleague. Congrats on the milestone. It's a pleasure to have been a part of it all times. Steve Jordan from AngryMarks.com sends a congratulations as well. So we had a few more, but thank you very much for all of the encouragement for the Pancakes and Power Slam show. So I just wanted to make very, very clear and give them a shout out on the show. Next, we have the Wyatt family going against Ryback. And of course, attacking Ryback post match. They attack the Big Show and they attack Ryback. So there's a part of me that thinks that there's going to be some type of. We'll probably have Bray with Lesnar. And then you have Strowman, Roman, and Harper. I'm kind of thinking they may do some type of 3-on-3 for Fastlane, just kind of a throwaway. Because right now there's still there's been many reports that they're trying to build Strowman to be a big guy, you know, either at Mania or at SummerSlam. Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker are two people who are big names. I'm talking as far as going against Strowman. I wrote an article on wrestling WrestleZone.com actually about this. Excuse me. And just a update on how I'm feeling. I'm much better. So got a little bit of a cough, but you know that they said that I'll be coughing for weeks, unfortunately. So thank you all for your support there. But yeah, they said that Strowman was going to be, you know, he's Vince's guy. He's Vince's project. So I wrote an article on WrestleZone that they could really book Strowman to be an Andre the Giant. And Andre the Giant was never a wrestler. He was never looked as being a professional wrestler. And of course he was. He was just a big guy. He was 7 foot tall. He was larger than life. Strowman's huge. They could book him the same way. And, you know, him and Lesnar would be interesting because, you know, the selling point is, of course, not the wrestling, but the selling point is will Brock Lesnar F5 Braun Strowman? So that is a good selling point because here's the thing with WrestleMania. WrestleMania is about glitz and glamour and spectacle. So you don't have to necessarily have the most technically savvy matches. And I even said this on the article, you know, Steamboat and Savage wasn't the $90,000 seat. It wasn't the 90,000 seat match. That it wasn't as amazing as it was. It was not the 90,000 seat match. The 90,000 seat match was Hogan and Andre, two people who can't wrestle worth a lick, but they were the main attraction because they were the larger than life characters. Same thing. Brock Lesnar's, you know, he's. Over the past dozen years, he's definitely toned down on his ability to wrestle. His suplexes kind of look, not very good, but he's coined himself the whole Suplex City. He's a monster. He's a star because he comes out. He looks like he can just beat anybody up in the entire world. And he is a monster. He's built himself to be such. Braun Strowman, he came in choking everybody out, big or small, and no matter who you are, choking everybody out. So you can have them two clash, and there's your spectacle. I'm a fan of that because of the whole Hogan Andre feel and the whole, you know, Clash of the Titans, so to speak. He might not be ready, you know, as far as he could have done it, you know, starting in January, he could have eliminated Brock Lesnar, and that would have been like, whoa, he eliminated Brock Lesnar all by himself. That could have been the start, but they didn't do that very well. I don't understand how you can bring people who's eliminated to come back to the ring and eliminate someone who's there. Like, I was talking to a good friend of mine during the Royal Rumble. I was actually with him and a bunch of other people. I said, okay, so that makes so what happens if the runner up, if nobody's in the ring except for the winner, what happens if the runner up comes back and eliminates the runner? So does the runner up win now, or does no one win? It's that whole thing of people coming back that are out and eliminating someone who's active, it just doesn't make sense. But it doesn't. Brock Lesnar and Bray Wyatt just doesn't do much for me from a WrestleMania standpoint, because this will probably be another WrestleMania loss by Bray Wyatt. And if Bray Wyatt beats Brock Lesnar, I just really don't buy that. I'm not intrigued enough in that feud to even really care about Brock Lesnar versus Bray Wyatt.
No, I mean, I don't think anybody is. That's why they brought in Strowman, is to have somebody that size, and again, he can't wrestle as much and as well. And like you said, I mean, Brock Lesnar, I mean, he pretty much, that's all he does is suplexes anymore. And not, like you said, not very well. I mean, he's doing a million times, you know, it just kind of becomes formulaic. So Strowman, I can see, he's still too new for me to really sink my teeth into him and say, this is a guy that's going to do this, that, and the other thing. But as far as, I mean, yeah, I could see that match being a bit of a, not a main event, but a bit of a crowd pleaser. I'd be interested in it. And, you know, if you got someone like Strowman come in, dethrone Brock Lesnar, and that would be great. I mean, that'd be great for the Wyatts, because obviously Bray Wyatt wouldn't be believable to do it on his own. So he's got one of his minions there to do it. So, I mean, it wouldn't be a total, you know, eye roller of a match. But, you know, again, it's, to me, Strowman's still too new for me to really know a whole lot about him. I already know I like him more than I do Ryback, so we'll give it that much. And Ryback with that new outfit. Yeah, he got new gear. I'm excited. I want to go out and buy a T-shirt with him in his trunks. But, yeah, and yeah, Ryback's throwaway. But, yeah, Braun Strowman could be that character Ryback should have been. How about that?
Yeah, makes sense. I understand that. Next, we have Adam Rose and Titus O'Neil. Now, like, I appreciate that they're, you know, building Titus O'Neil as a strong mid-card babyface. I'm cool with that. I'm not too big on the social outcast, but I've always had a soft spot for Adam Rose. It's something about Adam Rose that I think that they can really market. I think Adam Rose is very marketable. They just dropped the ball with him. The whole social outcast, I'm just not buying into. It's just the placeholder for me, but the whole Heathy baby, I love it. His Adam Rose is, I guess Adam Rose to me is like Fandango to you, because there's just a soft spot that I have for Adam Rose that really believes that he's marketable. His promo work is hilarious. And, you know, he comes out, Heathy baby. I love that line. I think it's so creative. I think it's absolutely hilarious. And the whole Rosebuds thing when he came out, the music was fun. I liked that whole thing. You know, I don't like what they're doing with them now so much, but I think that Adam Rose could be like a Tito Santana, very strong mid-card babyface. I really think that he could be. And, but you know, he's funny, and he's really the only person that I care for in the social outcast. So him winning wasn't a really bad idea for me. And he is the radical mongoose, Derek.
radical mind you. I like that term he used last night. And I do like the social media. I'm behind them because I just like these
social
group
media.
Of misfits.
You mean social outcasts?
Social outcasts. Yeah, whatever. I like the group of misfits they just throw together. I like Curtis Axel. Fandango should be a part of it. Heath Slater's got his moments. I don't hate him. And Adam Rose, it's just, I don't like him as much as you do, obviously, but yeah, I don't think anyone does. However, I mean, he does have a place on Raw, and he does have a place in that group. And I like the group. They just kind of, they know that they're the Raw losers, I guess. And so they have this extra, you know, chip on their shoulder, and they come out, pat each other on the back. And I like that camaraderie. I think it's a great stable, and I want to see them kind of progress and do more. I mean, you know, maybe get some upsets or, you know, things of that nature. But, you know, Adam Rose, you know, take him or leave him. I am glad he got the win. And, again, it's just the camaraderie between the stable. They can make this work. And I think them being their snide selves outside of wrestling on social media made this spot for them. And so, I mean, it's kind of like a self-deserving spot that they made. And so I want to see them do the best they can at it and keep going.
Yeah. I can agree with that. So Dean Ambrose calls out Brock Lesnar, and Lesnar comes out, destroys Ambrose. Reigns comes out, distracts Lesnar, and then Ambrose gives him a low blow. So the crowd was really behind Dean Ambrose, of course, because he's an internet darling. But, I don't know. I still don't see a lot of money in Ambrose. I like what they're doing with him on Lesnar. It's different. It's new. I just don't see how far it's going to go. It doesn't seem like it's going to go too far. I wouldn't be opposed if they took it to WrestleMania and did Ambrose versus Lesnar, but I'm just trying to figure out how any of this makes Roman Reigns stronger. It seems like they're trying to overshadow Roman Reigns because they know that force-feeding him to the crowd just always backfires. So it seems like they're making a better rivalry between Lesnar and Ambrose to overshadow Roman Reigns. And I don't know. It's interesting. Because there's been talks of a potential heel turn from Ambrose to Reigns. So I really don't know what they're doing with this. And it's kind of confusing, but it does spark some interest, you know, for the triple threat match. But, you know, how does this make Roman Reigns look strong? And if he's supposed to be the guy who goes against Triple H, He's the weakest looking one in this whole booked feud. More people are interested in, you know, Ambrose and Lesnar than they are Reigns. So it's just, again, it's just a booking, you know, cluster mess. It just doesn't make much sense in the long run leading to WrestleMania. It's going to be a great match. It really is. But at the same time, it's like, you know, how is this building Roman Reigns at the end? If we see a turn, if we see Ambrose turns, how was feuding with Lesnar going to make Ambrose strong enough to turn against Reigns? It's a bit too convoluted for someone for a spectator to really get behind one of the three. They're both all three of them are technically baby faces. And Lesnar is becoming more heelish, but it's really tough to turn him full on heel unless you have like an Undertaker. Like that's really the only person that can make him get booed. And so it makes it really tough to really make any one of the three look stronger than the others. Because of that, and booking three, you know, Ambrose and Lesnar are very popular. Roman Reigns is being built up to be the next heir apparent babyface. So you're really not building one. You're not really making one of them look strong. So it's a bit convoluted for me.
Yeah, I mean, and it's the thing about it, of the three, I mean, Reigns is the one who's like the odd man out. I mean, I don't know if they're trying to build Ambrose to make this match more interesting, so because he doesn't have the physique as big as Reigns or Lesnar, but maybe they're so he's this underdog that just gonna come in, stand up Brock Lesnar. I don't care, he's a lunatic. This, that, and the other thing, which works because that matches his style. But again, what's the end result going to be? We're going to have the match at Fastlane, the three-way. Are Reigns and Ambrose still going to be friends after that, or is one of them going to turn? I mean, it's, you know, I can't see Roman Reigns and – or I'm sorry, I can't see Ambrose and Lesnar giving each other high fives backstage and, you know, having fun and goofing off like him and Reigns do. So it's
– yeah.
What is the end result? And it seems like it's such a cluster, and you're just going to be watching this match, you know, thinking something's got to happen. Something is going to happen between either Reigns and Ambrose, or I don't see how any one of those two could even pair with Brock Lesnar. So I just it's weird. I don't know if they're doing that again just to try to make Ambrose more of a player in the game. However, I mean, Ambrose is fine what he's doing. So, you know. It's very, like you said, it's kind of a clustered mess, and nobody knows what's going to happen, which it's going to make it interesting going into Fastlane. It's just the end result. Is it going to make any sense going into WrestleMania? Because I don't want to be disappointed.
Yeah. And then there's a part of me, they did the whole Lesnar stare down with Triple H, and, you know, from a marquee standpoint, Brock Lesnar versus Triple H main event in WrestleMania in Dallas. No, there's nothing wrong with that from a marquee standpoint, but we've already saw that. We've already seen that. We've already seen, you know, Triple H versus Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. I'm not really interested in watching that again. You know, I possibly could watch that at the expense of The Undertaker main eventing against someone huge, you know, maybe, you know, Cena comes back from injury or someone out there that's worthy.
Daniel Bryan.
Daniel Bryan, that's unfortunate, but it's not going to happen. But someone worthy of legendary, you know, don't have him go against like a Kevin Owens or something, especially if it's his home state. Texas, and you know, it's basically Undertaker country. So if they main event the Undertaker against someone legendary, that could work as a main event, because I wouldn't want to see Brock Lesnar and Triple H main event. I'm not interested, but I'm willing to see that at the expense of Ambrose turning on Reigns, costing him, and then having an Intercontinental title match between Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose. I'm willing to sacrifice watching Lesnar Triple H again, you know, at that cost. I think that it would even be better if somehow The Undertaker is inserted in that match, if they do Lesnar Triple H and then make it a triple threat between Triple H, Lesnar, and The Undertaker. So that would be my preference if they did it that way, and then have Reigns and Ambrose go against each other for the Intercontinental title. Both of them, they're the future. They have a lot of time up. All right, real quick, Del Rio, what WWE Hall of Famer trained Daniel Bryan? That's the next trivia question. We had Del Rio and Rusev defeating Lucha Dragons, Tamina defeating Becky Lynch. And then two things real quick. We only got a couple of minutes. Dudley Hilton on the Usos. That was a bit weird. It seemed like they're going to lead this to WrestleMania. We might see the Usos versus the Dudleys for a number one contenders match at Fastlane. We may see that, and then maybe the New Day may ruin that. And then we'll see like a triple threat, kind of like a TLC match, you know, like back in the day. I wouldn't be opposed to that. But just having the Dudleys turn heel, I don't see really what that does. It's just really ill-timed, and it's really too late. The train is the train has left a long time ago on the Dudley's relevant to the WWE at this point?
The train left Dudleyville.
Yeah,
is that sure we're trying to say? Yeah. I mean, I didn't really care one way or other. I didn't think the match was a bust, and Dudley's turned on these. So who cares? I mean, I was kind of more interested in Goldust and dressing up like the legendary Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
Against our Drew. I'm digging it, and I'd like to see something like this a resurgence happen. So I mean, I like the comedy relief on Monday Night Raw. They could use a little more of it at times, but this is something I would like to actually see. So I'm kind of excited for that. Yeah, I mean, they can play off each other so well. R-Truth is such a comic, and as well as Goldust. Goldust could be – you give him the script to be a shepherd. I mean, he would make the most of it and be hilarious. So I mean, he could do anything. And so these two together, I mean, it's – I'm not going to say they're going to take over the world, but that was funny. I wanted to give a special shout-out for that. But, yeah, Usos, Dudley's, you know, New Day. With Mark Henry, of all people, you see Mark Henry just kind of, you know, leave the room. That's pretty much how it goes.
Unfortunately. Excuse me while I touch the sky.
I'm happy about that. I'm glad to see him back.
Yeah, it was that was really funny. Shawn Michaels is the correct answer. Daniel Bryan. All right, we only got a couple minutes left. Let's talk a little bit of Flavor of the Week.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
All right, Derek, real quick, what is your most memorable Daniel Bryan moment?
There's a few. I don't know. I like Team No. I think a lot of people kind of forget about that, but I thought, you know, that was great between him and Kane, their back-and-forth style. When Sheamus beat him at WrestleMania, I can't remember which one, it was like 2 or 3 years ago in like a few seconds, for him to come from that and to go on to be the Daniel Bryan that he is today. And obviously him against the Authority and coming through the ranks. I mean, it's the ultimate underdog story. Everybody loves the underdog, but he played it so well, and he got the ultimate payoff that he deserved. And it's unfortunate what happened now, but he can always go to bed at night knowing that, you know, there was a time in this universe he was the main guy in WWE. So it was just kind of seeing his beginnings, you know, and he really made it his. He made it his own. And so, again, God bless him. Great job.
Absolutely. Just like you said, I mean, 5'8", 190 pounds. I mean, who would have thought, you know, that he would be the guy and, you know, real quick, my most memorable Daniel Bryan moment, you know, I remember that match between him and Nigel McGuinness in ROH. That was just phenomenal. Of course, the match with him and Roderick Strong in 2005, almost went an hour. Great stuff. But I would say I think that Daniel Bryan saved WrestleMania 30. I really did. It was supposed to be such a monumental, you know, event. It wasn't very good, especially when you had, you know, The Undertaker lose against Brock Lesnar, losing the streak in New Orleans. It was just horrible. The Undertaker just looked so decrepit and just feeble. It was a really bad showing of The Undertaker. But thank God, you know, for Daniel Bryan defeating Triple H in the beginning and just saving that main event, because who really would have want to see Randy Orton versus Batista in a simple singles match to end WrestleMania 30. That would have been absolutely brutal. And I wrote an article on Bleacher Report about that a few years ago, how bad that would have been. I mean, just on paper, it just makes absolutely no sense. Thank God that Seattle hijacked Raw. Thank God that it was so infectious for him to be thrust into the main event, because he really, really saved WrestleMania 30 because of everything that happened that wasn't favorable in the viewer's eyes. So kudos to Daniel Bryan. I tell you what, man, he at 34 years old, he's almost 35. 35 accomplished so much at 30, you know, within, you know, the first 34 years of his life. Man, a lot of people can't say that. They really can't. People are, you know, double his age and still wrestling for, you know, pennies on the dollar. So for him to do that is very admirable. So I have to say yes, yes, yes to Daniel Bryan. God bless you, man.
And thank you all for listening. That's 202 episodes. We will see you next week. God bless you all. Enjoy your week. Bye-bye.